Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. YouTubers, hello. Nikias, I hope you're having a pretty good day.
Gosh, darn
hope it. Nothing is hurting you right now. You look good though. Look, you had a good weekend. Look like you're shining. Like you worked out a little bit. Like Debo, right?
You got any more? Was that it? Is that the three pack?
I was trying to be swift about it.
This is why Steve is the best in the business. Yeah, pretty solid weekend. Churchfield weekend, so that was fun. A lot of playing on the keyboard this weekend. The Eagles did not make me very happy yesterday, but that's neither here nor there. Congrats to any Niner fans watching or listening to the podcast. Salute. Got it back in blood. Yeah, no qualms here. Y'all just outplayed us, whatever. Anyway, happy to be here. Excited to hoop it up. We have our first rookie report of the season. I'm always excited about these episodes. I'm also always stressed about these episodes because I want to make sure I'm like good with these types of things. But excited to talk about the early returns of some of the interesting rookies from this year's class. If we miss any of the rookies on your favorite team, we are going to get into the rookie mailbag in the second episode of the pod this week. So email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com if we missed your guy. We are more than willing to talk about him. We just got some time constraints. While we're in the bookkeeping portion of the program, we'll just quickly remind folks, and as we enter 2024, I'm just not going to keep doing this, but we are part of the network. We are here every Tuesday on YouTube. So if you are new to JJ's channel or just generally new to us, we are here every Tuesday. Second episode that drops on Thursday or Friday, that's audio only. So if you do like what you see slash hear, you can subscribe to us, Apple, Spotify, all that good stuff. Come rock with us. We have a lot of fun talking hoop. Second thing, as we are recording on a Monday afternoon, we have in-season tournament basketball tonight. So naturally, as we talk about some of the rookies, i.e. Jordan Hawkins for New Orleans, naturally, any of the stats that we use or observations will not include what happens on Monday night. So we'll just throw the obvious caveat out there very quickly. We'll get into some news items. On the W side, Christy Tolliver named associate head coach of the Phoenix Mercury, which I would imagine that serves as a retirement piece, but I guess we will see officially over the course of the offseason. Steve, how do you feel about the hire?
I think it's positive. Obviously, she's a tremendous player. Has coached before, so I think this will be the next logical step as far as where she wants to go. I think it's a good hire for the Mercury to add to their staff and help the transition with their latest head coach hire. So I think it's a positive step. What say you, sir?
It caught me off guard a bit, which you get any W news in like December is going to catch you off guard because you normally things normally heat up in like January, February once free agency starts going. But beyond that, I do think it's a good hire. She's been coaching for a minute now. Like she was doing some Wizards work while she was with the Mystics in 2018, 2019, most recently with the Dallas Mavericks. So the coaching experience is clearly there. And I think going into Phoenix as you bring in the new regime, and if you remember that that opening press conference, the comments about, hey, I need to learn the league. I need to know things. Can't get much better than Christy Tolliver, who has played in the league and also has coaching experience to help along with that process, in addition to what she brings to the table in her own right. So, like the hire, should be interesting to follow moving forward. Very quickly on the injury front, Kelly Oubre, who again suffered the fractured rib as part of the injury that he suffered, that wreck. Glad he's doing okay. He may return later this week, per Shams, as early as Wednesday against Washington, or on Friday against Atlanta. So glad to see that news. Less on a more somber note, this was announced late last week, was Zach LaVine with a foot injury. He's been ruled out a week. We'll see what the recovery process is like there. Ben Simmons going to have his back reevaluated in 2 weeks. And Gary Payton II suffered a torn right calf. He's out indefinitely. If you listen to our Warriors episode last Thursday, we did touch on the injury that he suffered. I think it was a Wednesday night. We just didn't have what the official diagnosis and timeline was. So out indefinitely, get better soon, Gary Payton II. Now, on a more positive note, let's talk about this rookie class because it has been a fun one. Got a few lined up, get some early observations. We're going to try to do this once a month if you are new to us. So hang with us. We're going to have some fun. Steve, a general question for you. Has there been a theme or a trend that's kind of stood out to you about this rookie class as a whole before we get into specific players and our observations?
Now, number one, I don't want to add another disclaimer, but this is Nikias's baby. This episode is his baby. So just we're going to get there. We're going to cook. Potential and upside. Very trendy words when it comes to young players. I totally understand that. But I think this group of guys, some are surpassing what people thought they would do. Some were waiting to see if the reps will pay off. But I think overall, you're seeing how important fit and opportunity is with some of these guys, being in the right spot to be able to grow and develop. I think it's something we'll touch on throughout this episode with different players. But you're seeing guys being in the right place for them. And you're seeing some other places where, okay, even if the results haven't been what they need to be, you're going to get the opportunity to continue to grow. I think that's been the biggest thing for me. What say you?
I think for me, and it's not super dissimilar to the 2021 class, but I think what pops for me with this class so far is just how much more responsibility some of these guys have. And like my eyes immediately go to the defensive end, and we're going to talk in depth about Victor Wembanyama. We're going to talk about Chet Holmgren, but like what they're asked to do as rim protectors, what they're asked to do as helpers, and even on down the line, like some of the assignments that Asar Thompson has gotten on the ball. The Hornets have been tossing Brandon Miller on point guard after point guard after point guard to some very mixed results, but like he's being asked to defend a bunch. Bilal in Washington, he's gotten some tough assignments. And I think part of that is just the context and the personnel. Another part of this is just where the league is going, where, you know, you've had conversations about Indiana and OKC in particular, where everyone can handle the ball, everyone can screen. You're getting closer and closer to each team having just five threats on the floor at all times. And so in general, as you enter the league, I think rookies have more to deal with. Even if they're not getting the top tier defensive assignments, you still got to worry about someone that can knock down shots, attack a closeout, and keep the ball moving. And so if you aren't ready to go, your head may spin a little bit. And so it's been fun to watch, again, the interior guys in particular, like Victor and Chet have just been insane defensively, period. And then once you add in the rookie layer, they've been special to start the season. It reminds me about how I felt with Evan Mobley and Herb Jones and some of the early impact we saw defensively from them. Like, this isn't normal, especially with where the league is right now with space and the decision-making and the ball handling and stuff. So it's been a lot of fun watching some of those guys pop defensively.
So you're saying this class is restoring the feeling for you? Is that the overwhelming theme? It's bringing that feeling back?
Yeah, we'll let you run.
Well, yeah. I'll ask one question. How versatile do you think this draft class is so far? Does versatility pop for you? Because you mentioned Victor, you mentioned Chet. We've got Asar, we've got Bilal, we've got Jaime Jaquez. We've got guys who can do a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. Is that potentially the trademark of this draft class?
It could be, because I think in general, the league is becoming a little bit more plug and play. Like those opportunities are going to be there if you know what you're doing on either end of the floor. And so you're seeing Jaime, and we're going to have fun talking about Jaime. What a season it's been for him so far. But yeah, I do think the versatility is popping. Again, defensively, Tamani Kamara in Portland has been loads of fun defensively. And he's helped unlock a lot of what Portland does defensively. But yeah, I think that versatility pops. It's been a lot of fun to track. These are rookies, so you still see the low points. But I've had a lot of fun digging in so far. With that being said, let's get into some individuals, players. Let's start with the number one pick of this year's draft, Victor Wembanyama. As of this recording, averaging 19.3 points per game, 52% on twos, 27% on threes, not the best, 83% from the line, a shade under 10 rebounds per game, 2.1 offensive rebounds, 2.6 assists to 3.5 turnovers, also not great, but we'll talk about the context there. 1.3 steals, 2.7 blocks for Wemby, which is third in the league. And currently the only player in the league averaging over 4 stocks, steals plus blocks. So a lot of event creation going on with Wemby. And for me, aside from, holy crap, a guy this size shouldn't be able to do these things, it starts with the defense for me with Wemby. It's felt better when he's like your primary pick and roll defender. If he's in a drop or he's getting up to the level, you immediately see this is a lot of length to deal with. And passing angles that may be there normally just aren't there with him. And even when it feels like he's overplaying something, his arms are everywhere. So you can't even really capitalize on it the way that you may want to. But it does feel like his sense and that feel in the gap when he's in a drop feels better as the season's gone along. And when he's on the weak side of actions, good freaking luck. You can't throw passes near him. Those skips are gone. And if you do get an advantage in pick and roll and now he's rotating over, good luck trying to finish over him. So early on, watching his activity defensively has been a ton of fun. Before I go any further and go to the other end of the floor, how have you felt about the defense from Wimby so far?
Well, I think the biggest thing is he just takes up so much space defensively. It's something where if you break the court into four different areas, he can take up a whole area. And so from an evaluation standpoint, it's been getting used to what is a breakdown for most players is not really a breakdown for him because of some of the help that he can provide and because of the recovery he can have. He can be on the weak side and overhelp, but still get back out to contest. There are plays where sometimes, even whether he's trying to help on a drive or he's defending and pick and roll, it's like he's out of position. You know, it doesn't look like he's there in a drop. He's looking for where the ball is. And then 2 seconds later, he blocks a shot. So for me, the defense that he brings is loud. And it's been interesting to watch teams try to adjust to him in a way to where, hey, can we just put him on the strong side? Do we put him in action? Where do we put him to kind of lessen some of that impact? But I think the defense it's been there all year for me. It's been loud. Like, you can clearly see the plays that he makes and the space that he takes up.
I think you touched on the recovery portion. That's been the most fun outside of just the obvious impact stuff. Watching someone actually get by him or slip a pass by him and he's turned the opposite direction because he's not the quickest guy, like moving the hips and all that good stuff. And then he just moves his left arm and it's just there. And it's like, at that point, what do you do exactly? Because you don't want to pump fake into oblivion and then lose whatever advantage you may have. That just helps the rest of San Antonio's defense. But I just think about the individual plays that Wimby's able to do. And then zooming out, just his presence, like you said, being able to just take up entire areas of the court. How much easier, in theory, that just makes defense for everyone else? Like, you don't have to have pristine screen navigation if you got Wimby defending the roller. Or you can afford to be a little bit more aggressive if he's not directly involved, because we know, hey, if you do slip this ball in, we get two to the ball, you slip the ball in, oh yeah, you got to meet Wimby at the rim. Or you're going to pump fake and try to skip it out to the perimeter, and you still have to deal with Wimby's length because of how wide the wingspan is. So, like, him already being kind of an amplifier defensively, in addition to being insane on his own right, I think is very impressive for a rookie. I've had a lot of fun with it. It's been a good rebounder so far. You do see some of the strength concerns pop up when he's defending post-ups. Like, I had a lot of fun going back to the Spurs-Nuggets game and watching Jokic just get into his chest. I was like, oh, no, he's getting moved. And there's a block on Jokic. It's like, oh, right, he could just do that. That's fun. But, like, watching those kind of stylistic clashes has been interesting. There's been countless debates about how much weight he should put on or how he needs to add strength or how quickly he needs to do it. Like, I do think the upper body strength is going to have to kind of be there moving forward. I don't think he needs to bulk up because you don't want to lose the mobility that he has. So it's going to be a fine line to walk there if you're San Antonio moving forward. But that, again, that's not new commentary. But the defense has been good. It's been fun.
Well, I think that's also part of the plan for San Antonio to a degree, to where, hey, you may not be ready to take all of these reps at the five. Here are these minutes with Zach Collins. But we need to see what it looks like when you're at the five, when you are engaged in pick and roll and the weak side has to help you, or if you can contain the penetration. I like that balance. I'm glad you brought up the Jokic matchup because I feel like there were a couple possessions where Wimby was there, jumped twice, and Jokic was like, fine. I'll score still, but like, this is slightly annoying.
Like, I ain't trying to work this hard. What are you doing? You're a rookie. Get out of the way. To the offensive end, because we mentioned the scoring. The efficiency inside the arc, solid, not spectacular, considering his dimensions and skill set. The three-point shooting, that's something that we've talked about when we were doing the Wimby streams for the NBA app. And I remember posing the question to one of the broadcasts, like, are we concerned at all about him being, like, I think low 30s at that point? Are we concerned at all about this based on the raw number? Do we care less because of the types of threes that he's taking? And as he enters the NBA, like, what will the shot selection from deep look like? He has still gotten to self-create quite a bit. And I think that's a big part of why the three-point number is 27. I don't think, in terms of skill, he's a 27% three-point shooter. I think he's better than that. But you think about the types of shots that he's taking, it makes sense that the percentage is low. the first thing I'd like to pose is, like, he does a lot offensively. You see it with the scoring. You certainly see it in the highlights. And if we go way back to that two-game series against Phoenix, where he just took over those games, you got to see, holy crap, this is what it might look like for the next 15 years if he stays healthy. 15-plus years if he stays healthy. This is a guy that can get a shot up against literally anyone. He can drive against opposing bigs because most of them aren't comfortable out there. And even if you stay in front, he can extend past you. He's comfortable enough with his footwork as a driver to get into Euro steps and odd foot finishes and things like that. The extension is there. He has good shooting touch. It's really difficult to deal with. On the flip side, and we'll bring up the handle point as we get to the next player. On the flip side, I don't think the handle is tight enough for him to do some of the things that he wants to do yet against NBA talent. And I think that perks up with some of the drives when he's already stationed on the perimeter and he's having to attack a set defense. I think digs are really bothering him right now. And I think as teams have gone to, you know, he's playing alongside Zach Collins, so you're putting your five on Zach Collins. We're putting fours or threes on Wimby. Like, okay, he's going to shoot over the top. Let's make sure he doesn't dominate inside. Let's get into his base. Let's disrupt his handle. Let's see what happens there. And I think he's gotten into a lot of turnover trouble there. Or even if it isn't a turnover, he's having to pick up the dribble and now he's tossing passes, which I'm curious to get your thoughts about how you felt about Wimby as a passer so far this year. But, like, that's been interesting to track. And then zooming out, which I feel has just been the non-Wimby San Antonio conversation among Spurs fans and non-Spurs fans, the context that he's in kind of requires him to do quite a bit with them going with Jeremy Sochan at point guard. It's very much been, let's let these young dudes play and figure some stuff out. But because Sochan isn't a natural table setter, and because he's another guy that draws switches and unders when operating in ball screens, there aren't a lot of advantages being created for Wimby. So it doesn't feel like he's in the position where he's going to average an efficient 20 right now, even independent of where he is as a player. And so it's felt kind of mixed bag-ish to me offensively, which sounds wild considering he's still averaging 19 a game. But that's kind of my early feel on Wimby offensively. Where are you at?
Well, let's break it down. Number one, you mentioned the drives. Would you like an interesting stat?
Yes.
I pulled it up real quick as you were speaking. No disrespect. There is one big for San Antonio that is averaging 2.3 drives a game. There's another big for San Antonio that is averaging 2.7. Can you name who is who?
Let's go. This feels like a fun, like, Wimby and Mamu stat. We got to go Wimby 1, Mamu 2.
Zach Collins, 2.3, Victor, 2.7.
Okay.
And so I think the thing for me, and this is one of my favorite parts about what San Antonio is doing, they are not putting him in a box. They're taking advantage of his wide skill set, and they're giving him and the team the freedom and the wiggle room to explore. Now, what do you do with that from an evaluation standpoint? Because you have a player of this size with this kind of talent who can get whatever shot they want. You can space them. You can post them. You can run them off handoffs. It's free flowing. But you get the results of, hey, he can get whatever shot he wants. He's hitting these step backs. It's insane. And also, it's 35% from mid-range. It's 28.9% above the break three. He only has 5 corner three attempts, so it's not like people are generating a bunch of stuff for him when he's spaced. The pull-up hasn't really been there. So how do you balance that out? I think as far as the context with Sochan goes, I think where... I'm gonna be honest here. If you go watch, there's a whole lot of both him and Trey Jones dribbling the ball, passing, and cutting. I just want to put that out there. So before everyone goes, hey, it's not this. No. They both do the same thing. I think they want to run a lot of offense for Keldon Johnson and Devin Vassell. They kind of just want to play. You can disagree with that portion, but it's not purely just Sochan. I think the difference is Trey Jones is a lot better in pick and roll than Jeremy Sochan is. I think everyone would agree in that. And so when Trey Jones is in pick and roll with Victor, it's going to look a lot different than when Jeremy Sochan is in pick and roll with Victor. And then you have the optics of staggers, pick and roll, whatever. And Wimby's putting a hand up for the post, and the ball doesn't go in there. And so I think it's very easy for people to look at that and be like, hey, why is the ball not going there? It should be going there. And it's like, well, yes, but also. You looks like you had something to say.
Oh, yeah. Just very quickly, as you mentioned, the Wimby with Trey Jones versus Wimby with Jeremy Sochan pick and roll stuff. Very quickly, per second spectrum. On possessions featuring a Trey Jones Wimby pick and roll, 1.09 points per possession. That is a solid number. When it is Jeremy Sochan with Wimby, 0.64 points per possession, which is, let's just say, very bad and not something that will sustain your offense.
Well, I mean, they're different players. They're different players. They're not going to do the same things in pick and roll with Jeremy Sochan. And here's the thing. I don't think San Antonio is going to be a spam pick and roll team regardless. So I don't know if it's necessarily going to be one of those things where we have to do this. I think they want to figure out how good they are and then put it into a box. I guess I'll go back to my first question. How do you feel about a person with this kind of skill set and the shot selection that comes with it, with this freedom? Because I think this is the point, to get these reps, to see exactly what we can do, but it's also going to get these results sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think this, oddly enough, this feels very much like, it's like the extreme of what I generally ask for when it comes to young teams. Like, hey, let these dudes play. Let these dudes figure it out. And so for me, like, I don't generally mind it. Like, I can quibble about some of the lack of structure, which feels weird to say about, like, a pop team for very obvious reasons. But, like, within this context, a lack of structure where it's like, Wimby, you are going to get your touches in these ways, in this order, because we are prioritizing this. Like, even with getting Keldon Johnson touches and getting Devin Vassell touches, it's not like either of those two guys are in a box either, to where they're only getting these types of touches and then everyone flows from there. So it's very much a y'all figure it out and then we can piece it together from there. I'm not inherently opposed to that, but this is also what it's going to look like. And to bounce back to your earlier point about, like, how do you evaluate it? I guess for me, it's going more granular. Like, okay, I recognize this isn't always going to be the offensive bit scheme wise. And so, okay, when you are spacing, you do have a closeout to attack. How well do you do it? Because I think, like, that specific situation is going to be replicated no matter what the system is. And so whether you're the closeout attacker 8 times a game or 14 times a game, you're going to need to read, how is this guy closing out? What is his body positioning? What kind of closeout is it going to be? Where is everyone else spaced? Where is the help coming from? How quickly can I diagnose it? Can I get to my spot without bobbling the ball? If help does come, how quickly do I process that my guy is open? What type of pass am I making? What is the passing placement from there? Like, those things are going to remain consistent. So for me, it's less worrying, hey, did Wimby get 5 post-up touches or 8? Did he, when they had a guard switched on to him, did he get it? No, what's going on here? It's less that and more, okay, when he gets it, what is he doing? How quickly is he processing this stuff? Because as San Antonio gets more answers, like, just structurally, the offense in December is not going to look like the offense in February. Like, I think they're going to have enough data to say, okay, these are the combinations we need to play in the second half of the year. And as we always do these rookie reports to talk about these guys, you always see, like, the bump post-February or post-March from these teams at the bottom of the standings. And so, like, I anticipate we're probably going to see a little bit more structure later. So for now, it's trying to find those specific pockets of, okay, what is he doing in this specific situation? What is he reading? And then kind of going from there.
I'm going to throw a secondary point Sochan thing out for you. Okay. It ties into Victor. It's something we've talked about with Victor before. Pick and roll, screening, footwork, angles. Are you getting a hit? Are you getting a touch? Are you slipping out? How does that factor into it for you if Vic's not necessarily getting the touch or Vic's slipping and Sohan's trying to get downhill or a team switches and they don't look to go in? Does that alter it for you at all?
Like, for me, and again, this goes back to, like, the Wimby streams that we did. Like, something that was pointed out very early on, like, hey, man, this isn't the best screening big that I've ever seen. Like, it was very Evan Mobley-esque rookie year, where it's like, I get you can slip out. I know what kind of talent you have. I know what kind of reads you can make. Help your guards, though. And in this situation where you have Sochan running action, you'd probably need to help him out because you're going to see unders and switches anyway. So, like, it'll probably help both of y'all if you are more intent on getting that contact. And so even if it's going to be a switch, that guy can't get reconnected to Sochan and you unlock a driving lane in which Sohan's a lot more comfortable driving the basketball than doing anything else. So, like, that's where Wimby can help himself and his team by being better in that aspect. But, like, that also, for me, watching this group and watching the Spurs last year, it's also why I'm not as mad as some other people are when they see like Wemby with the hand up and he doesn't get the ball. It's just like, well, these are some of the reads that I was seeing last year. So like, I'm not super surprised that some of these passing windows are being missed based on who has the ball. Cause like, this isn't new for me. I think for people that are new to the Spurs experience because they are new to the Wemby experience, they're seeing this and it's like, what the heck are these guys doing? And so like, that might be why some of my reaction is a little bit more muted versus someone else. But yeah, to the screening point, like Wemby can just flat out be better. And like, it really pops when he's off the ball. If they're running something that flows into like a Wemby touch or something, you can always tell if Wemby's designed to get the ball or not. And like, that can't be the bit. That's not exclusive to him. That's just a basketball player thing, I feel. But it's obvious considering he's also just a bad screener in his own right. You can kind of tell, oh, he's just not even trying to get contact here. He's trying to establish position. This is for him. And that's going to help the defense gear up against a personnel that isn't, like, the Spurs are not a playoff team. So, like, that has to be an area of growth for him, I feel.
Okay. So, what are you more concerned about, the handle or the turnovers?
For me, it's the handle. Because I think as the personnel gets better, he'll be in better position to, like, puncture some of the gaps that he's seeing. And if the handle's tighter, and even if the contest doesn't get better, if the handle's tighter, some of the turnovers are just going to be erased. I think the digs from the nail are a little bit lower. I think they're bothering him quite a bit. And this is something that popped like very early on during the summer league stint. So it's not new. But I think as the handle tightens, he should just look a lot better as the handle tightens. I think the turnovers are dipped naturally there. And I think that's kind of the difference between like him and Chet. To where, again, Wemby's seeing a lot of fours and some threes on him. And then you factor in the help on top of that. I think it's even more important for him to get the handle tightened if he's going to be attacking from the perimeter as much as he is.
I think my thing is, like, he's very comfortable taking that mid-range jumper. And so if he gets space, he's going to take it. Like, that, there's no doubt about it. I'm going to shoot over you. And so in my mind, I'm trying to balance out, how do I feel about that shot? Versus what happens when that just starts going down? Now what do you do? And then as far as like the overall usage goes, there's no one thing that they're really running for him. So you know what I mean? I would feel differently if it was like, hey, we're running an inverted pick and roll and he's getting the ball poked every time that he drives off. Or every time they run a post up, he's getting pushed out from the block to the three-point line. Like there's no one thing we can really point to just because of how they play. So it's like, This is a challenging player to evaluate because very talented, does very talented, loud things. There's also things that go right against that, and there's expectations. But it's been fun to watch him play, like regardless of how you feel about it. Like, how can you not enjoy this large person doing these type of things nightly?
He's a real life video game player. Like, I don't lose sight of that, and I hope nobody else loses sight of that. And that's before we move to the next player. I guess just me being an annoying person. Where it's just like, okay, these expectations are here because he's this good. Don't get lost in, is he living up to expectation or not, to where you miss, this dude is awesome. If he only becomes a 7-time All-Star, this is going to be an awesome player that we just haven't seen before. We should enjoy that versus, he's not the greatest guy since LeBron. Y'all lied. Everything he does stinks. Like, don't fall into that trap. We shouldn't do that. Maybe that's just me yelling at the internet, which always goes well. Anyway, quick question for you before we move to Chet. How do you feel about Wemby as a passer?
I mean, it's one of those things where some of the passes that he makes, like, he's got the vision and he just throws it. Like, if you look, go pull up, he'll be at the three-point line, Sohan will duck in, all of a sudden, boom, it's there. Come off a handoff, looks like he's about to shoot. Oh, yeah, I'm very tall, I'll just drop it right to you. So I think the passing chops are there. It's just one of those things where I don't know if we're going to see exactly how much he can do there until there's more of a focus point with him.
All right, got you. I'm right there with you. Like, the flashes have been fun. Like, watching him, like, drive baseline and then sling these passes to the slot, it's like, wait a minute, centers aren't supposed to do that. Especially not 7'3", 7'4", dudes. What is this? Why are you hanging in the air? Why are you throwing jump passes? That's been fun. I've been keeping an eye on some of, like, the elbow usage that he's getting. Because, like, there aren't a ton of cut opportunities for him to hit. Just by virtue of how the rest of his teammates are being guarded. But like, it's encouraging to me that he does see some of these windows and try some of these tight window throws. Like, that's also part of the turnover stuff. But like, I will live with those process wise. Like, I'm glad you see that window. And as the team gets better, or you get better teammates or more spacing, like, those should turn into assists in year two or year three. So like, that's the kind of stuff that's encouraging to me. All right. A lot on Wimby. There'll be more on Wimby moving forward. Let's get to Chet Holmgren. Another number one overall pick, not from this class, though. 17.6 points per game, 61% on two, 40% from three, 87% from the line, 8 boards, 2.6 assists to 1.9 turnovers, 0.9 steals, 2.2 blocks. And as we talked a little bit about the Wimby handle and how important that's going to be, that's probably been the thing that's popped the most for me with Chet this year. And that's based on like some of the summer league action that we saw and talked about, where I was like, hey, I see where Chet's trying to get to. The handle has to get tighter because digs are bothering him. The handle is high. That's going to be a problem. And for him to have grown as much as he has from like July until now, to where he is a legitimate driving threat at the five, I didn't have that on my bingo card. Like, this very much felt like a second half of this year heading into next year. Oh, this feels better. And if OKC makes the playoffs, maybe he struggles in the first round or whatever, and then next year we see the big boom. The fact that he's already kind of here is insane to me. Can I drop a very quick Chet stat?
Let's do it.
Mentioned with Wimby, he's getting defended by fours. Chet, seeing a lot of fives, naturally. Per second spectrum, among 90 players with at least 100 drives this year, Chet is fifth in blow-by percentage. Which is wild for a few reasons. But, you know, contextually, if he's being defended by fives, he's going to be quicker than them. And if they're having to scramble after him on the perimeter because he's a really good shooter, those opportunities are going to be there. Like, the top five is littered with a lot of shooters, which makes sense. Very aggressive closeouts. You pump, you go, you're going to get by your guy. But the fact that Chet is top five among this kind of sample of players is wild to me. And it speaks to the value that he has at the five as someone that can attack off the bounce, as someone that can knock down shots. And so as the handle has gotten better, everything else opens up. Because coming in, I think we both kind of figured he's going to be a really good pick and pop threat. He's going to be a really good pick and roll threat. A legitimate above the rim threat you can throw lobs to. That's going to be different for what OKC's had at the five spot. And defensively, he's going to add a layer of rim protection that's going to be good. The fact that you have gotten all of that, plus these drives, he's been one of the most impactful centers in the league already. And that is impressive and also terrifying moving forward.
Yeah.
That he's been this good this early.
Yeah, we got rookie report bars. Yeah, folks, he's heating up. He's heating up. He's heating up, folks.
But no, he's just been a joy to watch. Yeah, I've been keeping an eye on his screening too. Like, it can be better. Just sprinkle that in there. But no, him shooting confidently the way that he is above the break is encouraging. Because early on, there were some pockets where he'd get the ball wide open. He kind of catches holds, wants to flow into something or drive. It's like, nah, take that. You can shoot. Take those. It looks like he's gotten more comfortable pulling from above the break, which further, you know, amplifies his ability out there. Teams have to worry about both, and that's opening up some things. So just moving forward, keeping an eye on, you know, how the handle continues to progress, what kind of passes is he making on the move. But the offense has been fun, and the defense has also been really freaking fun.
Now, what I'd say with Chet is there's a consistency that he's brought to the table so far this year that I don't think I anticipated. I think we all knew the talent. I think we thought the fit would work as far as him helping the OKC elevate in a way. I don't think I expected him to do this every single night at this level. And so if you have a player with his size and his talent shooting 71.6% in restricted area, 50% from mid-range, it's only 18 attempts, but still, and 40.5% above the break three, that's a pretty nice combination as far as a profile goes. And then you add in to the fit with Oklahoma City and the fact that he can space, he can screen, he can roll, but he can drive and he can cut. And so it doesn't necessarily feel like he's a five. And you got to tie it back into OKC typically trending smaller to a degree with some of the people they've played at the five to enhance what they do. And now, oh yeah, Chet does all of that, like all of that, and he's very good at it. So now we can go off to the races. I think my favorite thing about him, it's not just the drives that you mentioned. He has an understanding of sequencing to a degree, which can keep a defense or a big off balance to where, whether he's the trail big, whether he's just spaced, you're not sure if he's going to let that three go or if he's going to drive right by you. And the fact that he can toggle between both, I think, is really important for him and his growth and OKC as a whole. I think I've liked that he tends to make quicker decisions on the ball. It never feels like he's on it for too long. One, two dribbles, if I don't have it, I'm letting it go. That fits into what OKC does. Defensively, probably held up stronger than I would have anticipated. There have been the matchups, whether it was Jokic, whether it was Embiid, where they said, hey, what's up, young fella? Boom, bop, bop, boom, bop. Hey, Jalen Williams, can you?
Yeah, when it went to Jalen, you guard him, and then Chet, you operate as a roamer. It's like, I love that conceptually. The fact that that had to become a counter after a quarter is where it's like, I'd much rather you just start that way, and that's just a bit versus Chet, try your best. Oh no, you were underneath the basket. Let's do something different. It just felt worse. Even if the place that they got to was sound, in my opinion.
I think the reps are important. I mean, he's going to have to grow into it. He's going to have to take some of those hits sometimes. But I think pick and roll coverage-wise, he's good positionally. If he's in a drop, he's right there. If he needs to come higher to the level, he's right there. His timing around the rim, as far as protecting it, has been really good, at least better than I thought it would be, quote-unquote, year one. So he's done his job. I know it's very boring analysis, but he does his job every single night. And I think he's a really big reason why OKC is in the position that they are in.
I'm with you. I think the other thing that I would bring up with Chet, like you mentioned, like him taking on some of those assignments at the five. One, Jokic and Embiid do that to virtually everyone. That's why they're Jokic and Embiid. I do think, even zooming out between those two specific matchups, what I have my eyebrow raised on with Chet at the five is how well this OKC group can rebound with him at the five. Because I think, and this is a comment I've made with him before, you may move him, but you're not moving him out of the way exactly. Like, he doesn't shy away from contact. You may move him, but because of his timing, because of the length, he can still challenge shots. I just worry about, like, what's behind him, especially if he's in a matchup to where he has to be closer to the level because they're facing a super dangerous pull-up shooter. OKC has had to rely a lot on game rebounding this year. Because to your earlier point, like they do trend smaller around him. And I think you see the obvious benefits of that offensively. Defensively, they may get a stop, but they may not end the possession. And they have been one of the worst defensive rebounding teams in the league. And I think Chet is fine, but there are just physicality / strength concerns there. Or I guess more strength concerns than physicality, because he's a very physical dude. So you have the strength concerns there, and he can be moved from guys. And if he's away from the rim, I think Lou Dort is a good rebounder for his position. I think Shea's a good rebounder for his position. I think Josh Giddey's a good rebounder for his position. But like ultimately, they're between 6'4", 6'7". And, you know, zooming out to just overall how far can OKC go this year, until they can end possessions, it's hard to foresee deep playoff run, even with the talent that they have. But again, that's a different discussion. We're here to talk about Chet. I guess... just a very quick question. How do you feel about Chet as a rebounder when he is in those positions? How do you feel about him?
I feel fine. I think it's better off for him when he does his work early. I think there are several possessions where he's in that drop and a Lou Dort or someone recovers. Maybe a shot goes up and he gets pushed under the rim. Those are the ones where I'm like, okay, let's keep an eye on that. But it's not something where I'm like, hey, I don't think he can do it. Because he's too much of a competitor, in my opinion. To allow that to be the bit. So I'm not too concerned.
Okay. I got you there. But other than that, he's just been...
I'm a little surprised you didn't have more on the screening, though. I would like for him to make a little bit more contact on those screens. It's...
He's in that camp.
It's very pass slip a lot. And I feel like there's some more juice that he could get as far as getting some of the pick and pops. I do like that sometimes they'll mix in and have a guard screen for him. I think that's fun, especially because it's OKC. They go guard all the time anyways, so they might as well sprinkle that in. But yeah, some of those screens, I'm like, hey, you could probably get yourself an opportunity here if you'd like.
It has to get better. I think... the other thing that I've kind of had thoughts on with the screening in particular is like, one, OKC's EQ system. they just generally see a lot of switches. So I wonder if he just kind of falls into camp of, let me get out of here with them rolling or rolling and diving to the basket or just popping out and see if we can create some things there. Like, OKC just feels like a slip-heavy team, period. And so I wonder how much of this is part of the ethos versus, all right, Chet, you gotta do that. And then beyond Chet, guys with his body type. We just talked about Wimby. Chet, I mentioned Evan Mobley. Just to talk, we'll talk about Derek Lively a little bit. Just those thinner guards, thinner bigs, like, do they just want to save those body blows? And, like, maybe that's part of why we don't see as much contact from those guys. Like, maybe that's part of it. And I wonder how much better the screening gets as he just beefs up a little bit, whatever the line is for him. So, like, it's going to be very much a multi-year thing. Like, I'm still tracking the Evan Mobley screens, for example. But, like, that's something that I want to keep an eye on. I wasn't going to be too mean to Chet. This is also something that we talked about before, so I didn't want to hammer it too long. Any closing Chet thoughts?
No. I'll be at the old staple. No.
There we go. All right, we are back. Let's move to Brandon Miller in Charlotte, averaging 14.4 points per game, 50% on twos, 38% from three on solid volume, 4.1 rebounds, two assists to 1.3 turnovers, about half a steal, half a block. I mentioned a little bit earlier about the level of responsibility that some of these rookies are getting. And I think Brandon Miller very much falls in that camp because of some of the injuries slash absences that they've had in the wing room this year. I think he's had to do a little bit more on both ends of the floor that maybe Charlotte anticipated heading into the year. But it's been kind of, it's been fun to watch him sort through that in real time. Like, I go back immediately to all of the Knick matchups so far, to where it's, you know, Mitchell Robinson's your opposing center. You're going to get a drop or you're going to get him at the level. And, like, watching him sort through, okay, I have this space. How do I want to deal with this? Can I get to this pull-up? Can I get to a floater? Can I engage this big and find a pass elsewhere? It hasn't been perfect in those situations, but you are seeing a growing level of comfort. Like, oh, if you give me space, like, I can get to these areas. And I can feel pretty good about my decision-making there. So, like, that part's been fun. And defensively, again, he's been tasked with defending a whole lot of shifty guards. And the results are mixed. This is a, 6'8", 6'9", dude, lanky guy. Screen navigation isn't the best, but he does compete on that end. And I think in general, he uses his length well. I think he's going to be another candidate in which he just has to get stronger in the upper body to absorb some of the drives that he's getting and some of the body blows that he's getting as he tries to reconnect the guys on the drive. But, like, I've generally enjoyed watching Brandon Miller play. And I think the NBA level skill that you see already, that guy can shoot the leather off of the basketball. And once he gets going, he does not care who's contesting or how hard they're contesting. It is very fun when he actually gets going because of the array of shots that he can hit. He's a very interesting, like, wing prospect for me as someone that can handle a little bit. The handle absolutely has to get tighter. Like, that's something that pops for film for me. But in general, someone that can handle, someone that can make passes, someone that you can trust to switch across multiple positions moving forward, you know, as he learns the NBA game, gets stronger. He's a versatile dude. So I've enjoyed the early Brandon Miller experience. What say you?
Well, here's what I'd say. You mentioned when he gets going. Well, lately he's been getting it going. One thing that helps his game, when the threes are going down, last six games as we record, he's 17 for 32 from three. I'm no math major, but that's better than 50%. So two thumbs up there. I'm keeping an eye on Brandon Miller as I feel like we're starting to see flashes. And this is one of those type of players that it's going to grow as the season goes on, as he gets more reps. This is a positive progress for him. Being able to play off ball, but handle some on-ball responsibility. Not have to carry things, but also, hey, you're going to have to go make some plays sometimes. And so you're going to have those possessions where he's comfortable. There's a drop. I have space. I know what I want to do. I'm getting there. You can have those possessions where he's getting pressured. Can't separate. His defender's fighting over the screen. How does he navigate those type of things? I feel like movement is Brandon Miller's best friend right now. When he's able to get dribble handoffs and he's able to get downhill that way, it feels more natural for him playmaking-wise. When he's spaced and he makes quick decisions, even if it's the sidestep three, I think he looks a lot better. The thing for me is I like the mindset for him with his drives. I think there's been some possessions where he showed a good level of patience against the drop that you mentioned, as far as, okay, I'm going to engage the defense. I'm going to come off two dribbles If I have the floater, I'll get to it. If I have the pull-up, I'll get to it. Some of the drives have been stronger than I anticipated. Honestly, strong attacks in transition, strong attacks off ball. The one thing for me that I'm noticing or keeping an eye on, what does he do once he gets in there?
Yes.
What is the plan once he gets in the paint? It's a positive that he's got the mindset to get in there, but is it strength? Is it finishing through contact? Is it seeing that there's help coming and now dishing it? Sometimes it feels like, okay, I'm here. I have to finish. Or, oh, I did actually get in here. Let me try and get something up. And it's like, you don't necessarily have to do that. You know what I mean? And so that's where I'm like, I'm keeping an eye on that. But it's a good ecosystem for him. Because, again, he doesn't have to do too much, but he has the room to do a lot. And so I think I anticipate he'll continue to grow as the season goes on.
I got you. I'm glad you brought up the driving point, because this is something that we talked about in summer league with him, where we were noting some of the downhill attacks. It was like, okay, I like this comfort. It's some lift stuff for me. I think he does have to get better at finishing through contact. Again, a lot of these guys are just 19, 20 years old. They just don't have the NBA bodies yet. And so, like, I don't want to say that for literally every player that we talk about today, but that's going to perk up for a lot of these guys. But they just have to get stronger and just get accustomed to dealing with the physicality they're going to see in the paint. And so just very quickly to your drive point and trying to finish things and things of that nature, 4 games this season with at least 4 free throw attempts. He also has 4 games with 0. It's just like, well, that kind of encapsulates very quickly the boom or bust nature of him getting into the paint. But to your point, the fact that he has the mindset to get down there, I think, is a positive, because it could be very easy to settle into, let me space, let me knock down shots because I'm good at it. I'm not going to be in the way. I'm going to let LaMelo and now Terry Rozier, like, y'all can handle all that ball handling stuff. We got other wings that can get downhill, like Gordon Hayward, Miles Bridges, whatever. Y'all do it. I'll just chill out here. He can settle in. But as someone who projects, as someone that can initiate some offense for you, you can post them up occasionally against smaller players. You want him getting all of those live ball reps. You want him to be in these different situations. And ultimately, you want him to have the mindset like, oh, no, I can take this. This is a sloppy closeout. Let me get downhill. Or I don't trust that this dude can stay in front of me. Let me go, or let me call for a screen and I can boogie from there. So I'm glad that he's getting these reps. I'm glad that old Cliff has given him these opportunities. It's been a lot of fun to watch him. Any closing thoughts on Brandon Miller?
Defensively, I would just like to add, I'd like to see him continue to do his work early. Some of the screen navigation, especially if it's off ball, where it's like dribble handoff, I have hit the first screen, there is a large gap between me and the person I was guarding. I'd like to see steps in the right direction there, but I've been pleasantly surprised by the off ball work as far as positioning goes. We'll see if the closeouts can keep up, see if he can keep the ball in front. But it's to me, it feels like he's got to do his work early. If he uses his length well, he can keep the ball in front. If he tries to be a little bit too active, or he bites on a fake, now the ball gets past him, and now Charlotte's in rotation. It's no good. So that's just one thing I would keep an eye on.
Yeah, recovery phase is going to be pretty big for him, especially considering what the rest of the personnel is right now. They don't have, like, outside of when Mark Williams is in the game, and even then you're tasking a second-year guy to clean up a whole lot of messes. You want to see that get better. But I think that'll come. I think as he continues to learn how to use his length, because he does have plenty of it, that should be better. And, you know, we're looking 2-3 years down the road. Like, he just projects as someone that can defend, like, 2 through 4 or 2.5 through 4 in all the things that we talked about offensively. I think he's going to be a really good player. On to Detroit. To Asar Thompson, who's averaging 10.7 points per game, 54% on twos, 14% on threes. We'll talk about it. 70% from the line, 9.1 rebounds, 3.2 offensive rebounds per game, which is just outside the top 10. He was inside the top 10 up until recently. So that's been a lot of fun. 2.7 assists to 2.2 turnovers, 1.1 steal a game, a block and a half per game. I recently wrote about Asar.
Is that a plug?
No, it's just the preamble. Oh, but no, okay. In all seriousness, I recently wrote about it. I was like, I was so close to like starting with the hot take. This is the most fun rookie to watch. I was like, okay, nah, I can't put him past Wimby. I'm not going to go that far. But the fact that it was a thought in my head kind of spoke to the stuff that I was seeing with him early in the year. He has at worst, like the second most fun highlight package in the league among rookies this year. Some of the blocks that he gets, the steals that he gets, in which he's off the ball, someone cuts behind him, he legitimately loses his guy, and he's like, oh, wait, let me react real quick. And he just teleports to a ball and gets a steal or a deflection anyway. It's insane. the offensive rebounding, one, it speaks to his nose for the ball. Two, it speaks to just the general energy that he plays with. Three, it's not just my guy cuts, I just happen to be down here and I jump higher than everyone else. He gets so many out-of-area offensive rebounds, too, and it's like, how on earth did you pick out this lane to fill up? How did you fill it that quickly? How'd you get up this high? And how'd you finish this? He's incredibly fun to watch off the ball. I think that just stands on both ends of the floor. Defensively, he's popped. Good screen navigator, not a great one, but it almost doesn't matter because of the wingspan that he has. And again, his ability to recover even when he's beat. It's big-like with what he's able to do as a recovery guy. It's insane watching him on that end. Offensively, mentioned the offensive rebounds. Has really good feel for a cutter. How many cut opportunities he gets offensively bleeds into Detroit's overall contest. We're not going to do that on this pod. We can talk about that later. But he does have a good sense for when to cut and where to cut. And so that bodes well for when the talent gets better around him and he has more opportunities to do that. That part's been fun. When he has the ball in his hands, the handle's good for a wing. I like it. He does tend to do too much. That's general rookie stuff. Also, the spacing context doesn't really help him when he's trying to create. But I do think the makings of a really fun ball screen creator are there for him. He has good passing vision. The handle is tighter than what you would expect for him. Not afraid to get downhill at all. But with him, you do still have to circle back to the jumper, in which I will say two things and then pass it to you. One, the jumper is just in a bad place. We can just be honest about it. It's in a bad place right now. But two, it is encouraging to me that when he does catch the ball in the corner, there is no hitch. There is no catch and hold. There's no hesitation. He is firing in rhythm or he is driving immediately. And that is very important for me. The jumper is going to be a long-term project. And depending on how you feel about it, he either gets it figured out and he's a multi-time all-star or he doesn't. And he's just going to be a really good player moving forward. It is important for me that he's not losing confidence in that jumper and that he is taking these shots in rhythm versus further halting what Detroit's offense has been so far. So like that portion has been encouraging for me. Overall, really fun player. I think he should still be like on a medium list for all defense, not quite short list. And ultimately, like if Detroit's bad, I don't know how that's going to register for the voters anyway. But like medium list candidate, I think Ausar Thompson's there for what he's done defensively so far this year. He's been really fun to watch. How have you felt about Ausar? What have been some of your primary takeaways?
Extremely fun to watch on defense. I think on ball is a lot stronger than off ball right now, but off ball also involves the recovery you mentioned. So the package there is great. It's bad analysis, but he just does stuff. He always does stuff. Like, I think he almost put up a 5x5 game. Like, he is always involved. He's active. My thing is trying to balance what he can do versus what he's allowed to do versus the context of Detroit in general. Because you have these moments where he's involved, has the ball in his hand, gets a drive, makes a great pass. You might not see that again for the rest of that game. You had the moment you mentioned the cutting. He may be cutting into someone who's rolling. Just because that's how it went. He may have a night where, oh, you're here. We're helping off you immediately. But then the ball doesn't go to him. So I can't necessarily tell, okay, can he hit the three like you mentioned? Because he's confident offensively. Like there's been no hesitation, but can he drive closeouts? Are there any closeouts to drive? So it's like, I feel like there's a whole lot of things that he can do. I don't know if we're going to have the answers right now or anytime soon. And that's where I'm like, where does it look better when Bojan is there? And now I can see more of what you could do since there is more spacing. Or is this a scenario where it just kind of is what it is? Like if is there one weak point you would say outside of shooting?
Like outside of shooting, like it's going to be like similar to Brandon Miller, like it's going to be upper body strength for him. And I think that more so perks up when instead of defending the shiftier guards, like I remember we talked about the Zach LaVine possessions earlier this year, like when he's matched up against a Luka or one of those power wings, like you really feel it on drives. You feel it on post up. And then kind of zooming out, I think we had a question in the watch party, like, hey, when can Ausar play the four? And I'm just like, in theory, I like that. In practice, I don't know if he currently has the facilities for that yet. And ultimately, I don't know if the Pistons roster allows them to have the facilities for that right now.
Tell me more.
Like, I just think if you're putting him on legitimate fours, like if it's a spacing four, like does that impact what he can do off the ball if he has to stay attached? And again, if it's at the four against like LeBron, which is LeBron, so he does that to everyone. So not the best example, but just in theory, if he's facing a power wing at the four, does that also mute some of the defensive impact they can have? And offensively, like, again, I kind of get it, especially if you use him as a screener a little bit, but he kind of has to be alongside Isaiah Stewart in that case. To at least give you the theory of front court spacing in that group. And so that's where I'm like, I don't think it's completely his fault. Like, there are just some roster things. But that's where I'm like, I don't know how often you can afford to go there.
Can I ask you an unfair question?
Sure.
Better fit as a four for Detroit, Isaiah Stewart or Asar Thompson?
Ew. That is an unfair question.
And just as you think about it, this is not a shot at either gentleman. Just saying, mm-hmm. with the context that they currently have, who do you think would be better equipped? Because you have these possessions where, hey, we've got flow, we've got action. Oh, the ball swung to Isaiah Stewart on the wing, and he didn't shoot it. Versus the context of, hey, Asar Thompson spaced on the weak side. D'Angelo Russell is literally at the elbow, not carrying a single bit. So I will preface that. What say you?
I guess the answer is just no. That's probably the answer. Wow. I don't like this question. Like, I guess it's probably still Stewart, because at least when he decides to shoot, he has shot well from deep. And so you get those. And you had that. Oh, man. That's a disgusting question.
Don't you did well. Don't you love you doing well. This pod with me?
It's good. I do. But guys, darn it. I don't like that. Ew. That just ruined my afternoon. That's crazy. I'll be thinking about that all day. I guess we will find out moving forward. But no, that seems to be like my only real thing with Asar. Like, again, jumper's just going to be number one, two, and three. Like, that just has to get to level. If he has a Derrick Jones Jr. level corner three, then we're probably having different discussions for him. But he's not there yet. But he's also a rookie, so... we'll see.
Like Dallas Derrick Jones Jr. or like Miami Derrick Jones Jr.?
Yes.
Okay.
Because right now he is not at either of those markers. While we're on the wing, at a very awkward offensive context, Bilal Coulibaly in Washington. We can flow there very quickly. We'll go a little rapid fire with some of these. Close things out. 8.2 points per game. 58% on twos. 44% from three on moderate volume. 3.8 boards. 1.6 assists. 1.1 steals, nearly a block per game. I'm intrigued by Bilal.
Wait, how tall is he?
We're going to do the bit, huh?
Yes. We're doing the Nekias Young Wing test.
I've seen 6'6", I've seen 6'7".
Okay.
Depending on where you...
Can he dribble?
He can dribble.
Can he defend?
He can defend.
Nekias is on board.
That's a nasty bit. Anyway, I do start with the defense for him. And as Washington, whose defense overall is not very good, but as they oscillate between we are playing 2v2, no help whatsoever, and hey, we are going to have a guy at the nail before you cross half court, it feels like. Either way, when Bilal's in help, he is legitimately fun and conversely terrifying for opposing offenses. His hands are so good already. You think you have a drive, or you think your roller has a short roll opportunity, and here he is flashing his hands, it's going the other way. If he's defending an action, he gets hung up on the screen, you think you have room, it's not even the James Harden reach around. He's like legitimately just back tapping the ball, and it's a turnover. The length pops, the hands pop, it's a lot of fun. I love watching this dude off the ball. Offensively, I am definitely intrigued. He's shooting well. The volume, it's, like I said, moderate volume. Like, it isn't super high. Teams let him take those shots. So he's going to have to keep firing those. The drives are what really interest me with him. Because he doesn't have elite burst, but it's good burst. The handle is elite. I have in my notes, it's a workable handle. Mm. But I'm watching the way that he drives, his footwork, the way he alters the stride length. When he gets to that second step in the gather, you don't know how quick it is, how quick he's going to go up. After taking that final step, he just does a really good job of shifting speeds. I'm just like, ooh, man. If he was on a team that had defenses tilting and rotating and he got to attack, with some of the field that he has as a driver, he would be an incredibly fun inside the yard scorer. And the flashes have already been cool. So, like, I think as the handle tightens and moving forward as the Wizards just get better, whatever version of better they get. Like, I don't want him to fall into, like, the Denny camp for me where I was like, man, I hope to see him on a good team. All these good skills will pop then. But, like, he has the early makings of that kind of guy for me where the defense is fun. He's shooting well. We'll see how real it is. But the drives and some of the passes that he's throwing, like, I like already. He's not throwing, like, weak side live dribble skips or anything like that. But I do like he doesn't have his eyes on, I am making this interior feed or else, like we see with some of the other rookie guards. Or just in general, what we see with rookies. I like that he's not afraid to make passes to the corner. And so I want to see him in a better context. I want to see what the scouting report, the updated scouting report on him looks like. So with these, some of these January or February games, do they kind of sit on some of his moves, on some of the drives? Do they kind of lean towards the corner on some of these? So like, oh, that outlet isn't there for him. But I've had a lot of fun. It was fun. I just dug into a whole bunch of his film this morning. I had a lot of fun.
I can imagine. The defense obviously jumps up. To add to it, it's context for me. I think the most important thing is the fact that A, he's taking those threes, and B, he's knocking them down. That's important, just to set yourself up for future success, to where it can't just be leave him open to a degree. I think that's key. The difference between, like, the look of his drives and the result, because it looks great, and I'm like, oh my gosh, he gets to come off the screen. This is fantastic. Oh, he got in the paint. Oh, there's no one moved. Oh, where does he pass it to? And then the flip side of, he might just be spaced in the corner for the next 5 minutes. Unless it's in transition, what do I do with that? And so that balance is what I'm trying to see, to where it's like, okay, is this a hidden skill set, or is this just the right amount for right now?
It's, and again, like, to your context point, like, I just wish it was better for him. Like, I wish he was somewhere that he could, like, he gets some opportunity to explore. He doesn't get, like, the full boat, though. And so it's cool that he's getting these early minutes. But it's also, to your point, he may be spaced, and depending on who he's playing with, not only will he not get to bring the ball up, he may just not touch it on a reversal because of who he's playing with. So we're not going to go there on this podcast. But it's a weird spot. Like, I do think he just projects as someone that's going to be more off ball anyway. So, like, it's not the worst thing in the world. He's not running, like, 30 ball screens a game. But you would like to see a little bit more involvement, if for no other reason than just to really test the limits of what he can do. I'm keeping an eye on, like, what the pull-up mechanics and stuff are going to look like for him. I do think, again, teams are willing to let him shoot. And I wonder, with more pressure, like, what that's going to look like for him. And that's really going to test the handle, which, again, I think it's workable right now, but there is room for improvement, especially as he navigates tight areas. So that's going to be interesting to track. But he's a fun player already. Like, I'm kind of here for the Bilal experience. And 49 Wizards fans that want reason to check into a Wizards game outside of my favorite team is playing the Wizards, Bilal's probably going to be your guy. He does fun stuff. If for no other reason, like, he's going to get a steal or two a game. They're going to make you like, what the heck did this dude just do?
Oh, watch him off ball. Stunt recovers all day. Follow-up question, real brief, real quick. Is he the next Giannis Antetokounmpo?
That's a tremendous shot. Let's aim for the first Rui Hachimura first. Okay, to Dallas with Derek Lively. Averaging 9 points, 8 rebounds, a block and a half. Converting 74% of his twos, so that's been fun. Him and Luka have run a lot of pick and roll together. In fact, only, I guess, technically 10 pick and roll duels have run more. Like, it's tied for 11th. Well over a point per possession on those pick and rolls. As you mentioned earlier in the podcast season, Luka is very excited to play with this guy. But I think for me, the athleticism pops very early. And you want to, you know, similar to some of the other bigs that we talked about in the pod, like, you want the screen to get better. But he is such a violent roller and a violent slipper that, like, even if he doesn't make contact, he's out of there so early. And he has this catch radius. He has this ability to go up above the rim. Like, you still kind of have to account for him on those rolls. You have to peel someone in, because if you don't, one, he's at the rim. Two, if Luka's in the game, that ball's just going up there to him. And so, like, he very much fills the run-and-dunk role right now, which I think is fine. The Mavericks have playoff aspirations, and I think he's slotting into that role very nicely. Defensively, I'm actually curious to see how you feel about the defense, because I feel like I go back and forth with him defensively. Like, some of the drop reps are solid, some of the switch reps are solid, and then other times he's just getting blasted, or he's doing a little bit too, or it's a little bit too much activity for him.
He's a growing young big defensively. I think the fact that he can nail both of those coverages to a certain level is a plus for Dallas, because they had trouble nailing one of those coverages at times last year. So I just think him being able to do it, you can live with some of the results. It's not as bad as we just can't do this. I think that's the biggest thing. Get him out the liability zone.
Got you. Like, I worry, like, one, just him in a vacuum. Young big in the NBA, you have to be able to nail a coverage or multiple coverages. How well do you do this? And then two, it's like, you also have to nail this because this team has Luka and Kyrie and they want to make the playoffs. And then 2A, you kind of have to nail this because this team has Luka and Kyrie and you also have, like, Maxi Kleber and Dwight Powell and they got Rashawn Holmes and we'll play Grant Williams at the five if we need to. It's like, you really got to nail this. And, like, that's a level of pressure that I don't wish on young bigs, to where we nail it or you are buried behind vets. So, like, that's something that's kind of in the back of my mind, like, evaluating him. Like, okay, does this mistake feel worse because I feel like he might get pulled, or is this actually just a bad mistake? It's like, it's been like an added tax for me.
Nah, it feels like you're thinking of the coach there. Anyways, I mean, it's hard to not talk about the roles with Lively. I think the one thing I would point out before you continue, the slips. Watch his footwork on his rolls. Even when he does slip, it looks like he's going to screen. And he gets right into that pocket, and he goes right to that rim. And because of, especially when he's playing with Luka, most teams are going to either put two on the ball or switch. He gives himself an advantage either way. So you throw in that he runs hard in transition. You throw in that he's building defensively. Like, a lot of people had question marks about the defense. The fact that he's at least attempting two things is a positive. So I think it's been a very solid start for Derek Lively. It's a very good fit.
Yeah, it's really good context for him. You get to play with Luka, you're going to get points. A very quick question for you before we move. Again, we'll go rapid fire with some of these last names. And we do have another episode this week, so if you got rookie questions for guys that we don't talk about, send them in. We will dive in deep as we generally do. But on the Lively front, just at the box score, 1.2 assists, 1.1 turnovers, not blowing anything out of the water, but a positive assist turnover ratio. With those slips, particularly when Luka's the ball handler, he gets some of these short roll opportunities. How have you felt about him in that context so far this year?
I think the skip pass is not the easiest thing for bigs to master, especially if you're young. So I like that he's mixing it in. You can still see sometimes it's not natural. It's kind of like a catch and over the head, and now it's there. Yeah. And so for me, that takes time. That takes reps. He's going to have to see it more. But I think the more that he gets it, I think the tough part is he has that combination of I just get the ball really late. So he's just used to continuing that role versus, hey, I got it right here. Oh, well, is this messing up my footwork? Am I gathered? Am I ready to go? So I think that will develop with time.
Okay, I got you. Let's go rapid fire with these last names. Let's go with Jordan Hawkins in New Orleans. Averaging a shade under 13 points per game, shooting 37% from three on high volume, four boards, two assists, a half a steal right now. He got a lot more playing time this year than I think many people anticipated because of all of the injuries that New Orleans had to deal with. Stop me if you've heard that one before. Hope everyone gets better soon, obviously. But the shooting popped immediately. Not only can he knock it down off the catch, he can knock it down off movement. His footwork is insane. And you see that pop in transition. Fills the lane very quickly. Doesn't even matter if the feet are set. He's able to score himself very quickly. Shoots a very easy ball. You put him in lineups with Zion. You give Zion any amount of space, he can just destroy worlds for you. But those two in particular, operating off of one another, some of the cuts that open up for Jordan Hawkins when he's playing off of Zion. And just in general, if you want to give Zion an isolation or a post touch, you got Jordan Hawkins one pass away. Good luck showing any kind of help off of that guy because Jordan Hawkins will be ready to shoot. That's been a lot of fun. Defensively, not a fan right now. He is a rookie wing, so that just comes with the program with a lot of these guys. But it's not great for him. That's going to be an area of growth for him. And then once you add in the roster context of Trey Murphy is back now, Jose Alvarado is going to be back. CJ McCollum's back. Dyson Daniels has been good. Herb Jones has been very good. As these guys get healthier, I love the shooting for Jordan Hawkins. If he's going to have these kind of troubles on the perimeter, like trying to contain drives, me and you were joking before the pod, watching him try to execute ice, and his guy just dusts him anyway, and then everyone else is kind of in a tailspin from there. If that doesn't tighten up soon, I would imagine the vets on the team are just going to soak up more of those minutes, and so we don't see the high 20s, low 30s from Jordan, and that goes into the teens, which would be natural. This is a talented group, but keeping an eye on that. So we'll see where the defense goes, but he is an absolute sniper, and it's been fun watching him knock down shots. Any Jordan Hawkins thoughts?
Well, he can shoot, and he shoots, and he shoots well. He is the, I believe, the only player in NBA history to sink 32 three-pointers in the first 11 games of their career. So he has an NBA skill set. The defense, it's going to come with reps. The playing time may go up and down. But the fact that you have like both of the people who hold the franchise rookie record tied on your roster at the same time is probably a positive for the Pelicans. And I think being able to, like we've seen this before with New Orleans, where a young guy plays more than maybe he should have had to. And, oh, wait, yeah, we can trust that. And now that becomes something that pays off later. So I think he's very good. The one thing is he absolutely knows the assignment in transition. He's out of there. He is out of there, and he's getting right to his spot and letting it go. So, yeah, salute to Jordan Hawkins.
Jordan Hawkins is just like, insert 2K player here when the shot goes up. By the time that camera flips, that man is already in a corner. And it's like, oh. Well, I don't know what to do with this. Three more points on the board. To Utah, Keontae George, a new starting point guard to the Utah Jazz. But anyway, 10.5 points, 39% on twos, 31% on threes, 78% from the line, three boards, five assists, only 2.2 turnovers. Steve, I've had fun with Keontae. I love the pacing that he plays with. I love the feel that he has. As someone that wasn't familiar with him up until summer league, like I don't watch a ton of college ball until the draft cycle starts. And I try to catch up, do my own thing. Also read and listen to people that are much smarter than I am with draft stuff. So I wasn't super familiar with Keontae heading into summer league. I was familiar with him by the time I left Vegas because that man absolutely balled out. And watching him take on the starting role in Utah has been interesting. Watching him operate in ball screens. Again, I love the pace that he plays with. He takes care of the ball, but he takes care of the ball with an asterisk for me. And I made this comment during one of the watch parties that we had to where like I was getting, they're different players. I'm not making a direct comparison, but like he was giving me like the Jalen Green vibes as he was navigating ball screens where it's like, okay, I'm going to run this ball screen. I am throwing this pass to the big. That skip pass is scary. That corner pass is scary. I am passing it here or I am taking the shot. And, like, I don't think that is inherently bad, but I think that's going to be the next area of growth for me outside of will shots fall. Because by all accounts, he is a guy that can knock down a bunch of shots and do so at a high level. It just hasn't happened yet this season. But the passing and how aggressive he gets as a passer, I think is going to be the thing that I'm tracking the most with him. Because even with the interior feeds, like, I love the chemistry that he's built with John Collins already. He is very much a fan of, like, the little underhand scoop and slipping that ball in there. Those two have a nice chemistry already. And I think in general, he has a nice feed for, okay, this guy is stepping up to me. I can slip this underneath or I can toss the lob here. Next step is going to be how comfortable can he make these passes to the corner? Can he do it with a live dribble? Can he do it with real velocity and placement? That's kind of where I met with Keontae. How have you felt about the starting situation for him so far?
One, I'm glad that he's getting the opportunity to run with it as, you know, he's going to be a pretty important piece for them in the future. The scoring from Keontae George always popped to me. I always was keeping an eye on the playmaking. And so for him to, I believe, what, lead the team in assists? I know, what does he lead rookies in assists too? I think that's a positive for him. The only thing I would say is these are good reps, but it's going to be fun to watch him find the balance between let me go score and let me go make these plays. Because there are some times where you can tell that he's looking to run the set, as you stated. He's looking to run this play. And if defenses start to pick up on that, now they can get into you early, fight over the screen, play's gone. Now what do you do? So can he balance in the natural playmaking and scoring that he has, the pace that he has with what he's trying to do? Or, you know, that's one of those things where you don't want to have a player who can do this, try too hard to do that, and now you lose what brought them to the table anyways.
I got you. I will say very quickly, like on the scoring portion, as he tries to find that balance, I do like, as he gets downhill, he does seek out contact. Like he still has to get better at playing through said contact, but just very quickly, 5.5 free throw attempts over his last 6 games. And I think in general, he has a good feel for when this guy's overplaying me, I can get into this guy's chest and get a foul call that way. So like, I'm glad he doesn't shy away from that in addition to what he's doing as a passer. But again, this is all going to be about evolving from there. Jaime Jaquez Jr. in Miami has been a revelation for this group. 12 points per game, 59% on twos, 39% from three on moderate volume, 79% from the line, 4 boards, nearly 3 assists to 1.5 turnovers, 1.1 steals. Steve, can I throw a very quick stat at you?
Yes.
About Jaime. So for those who have watched Heat games, you know they don't just stash this dude in the corner. They let him handle some pick and rolls. They'll toss to him in the post, get into their post split stuff. They give him a lot of responsibility. The post-ups, though, whether he's facing a mismatch, whether he's facing a wing that he just feels like, you can't guard me. Like I go back to the in-season tournament game against Milwaukee, where he just kind of looked Chris Middleton in the eyes and said, nah, dog, which very conflicting feelings for me, but we will leave that there. Anyway, on possessions featuring a Jaime Jaquez post-up, includes passes, all the good stuff, 1.63 points per possession on those trips, which is second in the NBA among 43 players with at least 20 post-ups. I do not think that's going to hold, but that is absurd. It also speaks to the level of comfort that he has when he gets the ball with his back to the basket. Again, they'll get into their split stuff. He's a good passer. He'll pick out cutters. He'll throw it to the opposite corner, and he does it with timing. You put a smaller dude on him, he is just taking him to the office. Put him on the wing. He doesn't mind facing up. The footwork is really good on the post. Miami trusts it, again, they trust him quite a bit offensively. And in order for him to get that playing time, they have to trust him defensively. Not an elite guy. Quicker guys give him some trouble. Watching him against DeMar DeRozan, that was a fun battle, though DeMar did get the best of him sometimes. Can defend multiple positions credibly. They trust him in zone. When they go to the switchier units, he's okay switching across multiple positions. Jaime's been very good for Miami. Any Jaime thoughts for you, good sir?
Well, I would add the positioning defensively. He's very good as far as the field goes. He knows when to close out, when not to. So that part has been fun. But he's been a very good fit for Miami. As far as being able to post up, he just fits what they do. He has a great feel for the game. And I think the fact that the only question is, hey, is he going to keep making shots, speaks volumes of what he's done so far.
Mm-hmm. And again, the little run ball screens, they use him as a screener as well to mismatch Hunt. He can make short roll reads. He's been really good. We will close this out with a couple of Portland guys. Scoot Henderson, who's missed a lot of time, but he is recently back coming off the bench. 9.2 points per game right now, 43% on twos, 22% from three, 68% from the line, 3 boards, 4 assists to 3.4 turnovers. And Tumani Kamara, who's averaging 6.3 points per game, 53% on twos, not so great from three, 4 boards, an assist, a steal, and half of a block. I kind of want to start with the defense. First and foremost, did you know that the Portland Trail Blazers have the 8th best half-court defense in the league right now?
I can't believe that you're speaking positively about the Portland Trail Blazers defense after the 2 years that we spent on this podcast where you've not had any positive things to say about the Portland Trail Blazers defense.
The defense was not in a great place. It seems to be very, they are not just a switchable group, but per second spectrum, they are just the switchiest team in the NBA. So that's fun. But they are switching all over the place. And kind of at the head of that right now is Tumani, who has been asked to defend literally everyone through the early goings of the season, and he has more than held his own. I am having so much fun watching that dude fly around on defense. Let me tell you, which, you know, to your point, a far cry from what I've normally had to say about Portland's defense. This is just it's a new group. They come in waves. They have all these 6'5 to 6'9 dudes that can just switch all over the place. Then you come off the bench and you got more guys that can switch. DeAndre Ayton actually holding his own in space this year. It's been fun. But we're not here to talk about the Blazers as a whole. Talk about Tumani. Defense has been fun. He's been finding gaps offensively. That's been cool. As for Scoot Henderson, it's been a disjointed rookie season because of the injuries. I will say just very quickly, I guess similar to Keontae, like I've enjoyed the pacing. Like teams have predictably met him with unders and they've met him with some switches. And I feel like he does a good job of chewing up that space without going too fast and picking out his spots from there. He's comfortable flowing into the pull-ups. We have to see where the pull-up lands in terms of efficiency. So that's going to be interesting to track. The passing has been good, and by my eye, trying different types of passes. So that's encouraging. That also is baked into the high turnover number right now, and it's to him just being a rookie. And with some of the guards that he's playing with, like Shaden was knocking down shots, hadn't been hitting them at a high level as of late. But you don't have Anthony Simons beside you to really draw help defenders away. So, like, offensive context can be a little bit better for Scoot. I feel like I'll have deeper thoughts on him as he just gets more games in. It's only, what, 10 or 11 for him so far this year. But just early returns on Scoot, doing a good job of just navigating space offensively. Tumani's been wild on defense. That's been fun. Any Blazer thoughts to close things out?
Scoot Henderson has 4 games of 7 assists or more and 6 games of 4 assists or less. We've seen the flashes of the playmaking from Scoot. We've also seen the flashes of him being a young guard with too much speed for his own good. And I think the biggest thing for him is just going to be reps. I know no one wants to hear that. It's going to take reps for him. I know you probably wished it was, hey, is the jumper good? That was the only question mark, but it's going to take some time. There's been some good flashes of him changing speeds and showing an ability to come off and make a play. Some nice pocket passes, some nice late jump passes when he gets in the paint. We've also seen the turbo button. We've seen too much of the turbo button. We've seen, okay, I'm in the paint. Now what? Oh, wait. We've seen the, okay, the pocket isn't there. Oh, no, I've picked up my dribble. What do I do now? I think the biggest thing for him is just going to be learning how to change speeds, and then the finishing probably needs to go up. It's only 29 attempts, but he's at 44.8% in the restricted area, and that's probably not ideal if you are a speedy guard. And 43.8% in the paint, non-restricted area, also not ideal. So I will give him grace and time, but I think that would probably be the biggest thing. I'm looking forward to see how does he change his speeds, when does he change his speeds, how does that grow from here.
There we go. But also, just quickly note, since Scoot has been back over the last 5 games, shooting 35% from 3 after, I think, going, what was it, 2 of 24 in the initial stretch of games for him from 3. So glad that that's starting to normalize a little bit. Again, we'll see where the jumper lands. And another hat tip to Tumani. I have plenty more rookie thoughts on players that we didn't get to. Again, send in those mailbag questions. That's dunkerspot@yahoo.com. We'll get to them. And even if we don't get to them, I'll just talk about some more rookies on the next spot anyway, because I feel bad about not talking about like Marcus Sasser in particular. But we're going to get out of here. Thank you for listening or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. And if for some reason you're watching this on JJ Redick's YouTube channel without being subscribed to JJ Redick's YouTube channel, you should probably subscribe.
Hit the bell.
JJ Redick's YouTube channel.
Hit the bell.
With the bell. But anyway, you can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join us in the Dunker Spot community. We have plenty of fun discussions in there. If you want to watch basketball with us, including these in-season tournament games, come rock with us, especially if you have League Pass. The link to the online watch party rooms will be in your podcast description or the video description here on YouTube. It should be hyperlinked. If so, just click on the information. It is free, no shenanigans. And if not, copy and paste the link into your browser. Once again, it is free, no shenanigans. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Hey, good job, man.